I think that we're ready to reconvene. I noticed that our hordes of admirers have disappeared down to the really devoted few. Okay. The 2006-2007 budget is our next agenda item, and I'm going to turn it over to the superintendent.
Okay, thank you. We did hand out two new documents tonight that I think will make the book a little bit easier to read. The first is this thick document, which looks like this, which actually defines the object codes that are part of our budget, and I'll mention that as we go through. But if you look at the department and division budgets, they're broken down into like purchase services, equipment, those kind of things. These tell you what all is contained in each one of those major objects. The other thing we handed you is a matrix. Budget cuts are made at the division level. And so the budget cuts are actually defined in a division. Like the budget cut in legal services, if there was one, would be defined within legal services, and it tells you about it. This is a matrix that takes every single one of those budget cuts. It's in the budget cut summary, and tells you on what page in each one of the various summaries that budget cut is reflected. because in many cases a budget cut in a function may be $2 million and it may be made up of six different individual budget cuts. Try to move through this as rapidly as I can and still be thorough, because there's a couple of three things that I wanted to do to be sure that we understood the budget as we go forward. Also, to remind the board, any kind of analysis, other kinds of reports that you want, we're prepared to try to get those done for you. Just either contact myself, Roger, or Mary G., and we'll facilitate that and get that done for you. That's why you have a thick notebook, so you can ask for other reports. You don't have to. It's not a rule. First of all, one of the things that gets lost in the shuffle that I want to talk about is that the budget is both a process and a product. The product is the budget and the book that you have, but there's a long process that goes into that, and I'm going to spend a little bit of time on that. First of all, let me give you a synopsis of the budget itself. The actual 2006-2007 superintendent's budget is $332,947, $332 million. I don't think in these terms in my real life. $332,947,870. And the total budget changes and reductions reflected here are $6.9 million. What I want to do is to spend a little bit of time on the budget process that we actually went through. It is a little bit different than we've done in the past. We've done some additional kinds of things. Spend a couple of minutes with you understanding the accounting system, which will help you understand some of the reports that you have. Talk about the superintendent's proposed budget in a broad sense, and then walk through how to read the budget document, which I think I've done with almost everybody, and then talk a couple of minutes about some of the major highlights. At your place is actually the PowerPoint presentation itself. This is actually an overview of all the things that we go through in preparing the budget, starting with preparation that we do back in the fall after we get Third Friday, and going all of the way through the board approving a final budget in October. Throughout the budget process, we use two decision filters that we bounced everything off of. The first of those was the board goals, is the first level decision filter, and the second level decision filter for us is the strategic priorities. There actually are two budgets that are prepared during the budget process, and I'll try to explain those. Back in January, we gave you a budget forecast. That budget forecast is the first budget that's prepared, and from that is where we derive the initial budget gap number that we used, which was about $8 million. The second budget that's prepared, which is the one you have now, and the one that you actually work on, is the superintendent's balanced budget, and it's made up of two things. It's made up of a cost-to-continue budget, and it's made up of a balanced budget. And you see both of those reflected in all the documents that you have. In preparing back in the fall for the budget, we do an enrollment projection. We calculate the statutory revenue cap increase per student. We get a preliminary state aid calculation, and we get a preliminary estimate of entitlement grants. That's what we do before we do the forecast. The forecast budget itself does revenue forecasts from the data that I just described. How many students do we project will be here? How much money will come in for each one of those students? What kinds of other kinds of funds will we receive? And that does the actual revenue forecast. The expenditure forecasts are based on continuing to provide the exact same level of service. And all we do is take that information. We apply expenditure-specific cost-of-living increases. There is a cost-of-living increase for paper. There's a cost-of-living increase for other kinds of things, but not the big, broad CPI that you see on the news. We apply those, or we apply other kinds of rates that we know about. We go to the gas company and say, how much is gas? How much you project gas is going to go up? We apply that. We estimate the retirements that will come in. And we take current staff salaries and carry those salaries forward with a negotiated increase. Out of that comes the forecast budget. That forecast budget then tells us the preliminary budget gap. And that's what we gave you back in January. And as you know, we did that differently this year, and we had a much more detailed summary of that. From the time we do the forecast budget to the time we do the superintendent's balanced budget, It's a very dynamic process. Things are changing all the time. There are entitlement dollar changes. For example, we received notification right toward the end of our budgeting process when we were getting ready to put everything to bed that we had received, that we would receive about $685,000 less in Title I money, which meant that we had to go back and obviously do a little bit of thinking. We also, during that, since then, we got the $100 budget inputs from the community. There are also continually changes in other rates. The CPI on all those factors adjust as you go throughout the year. So all of that is happening after the forecast that makes the change. We take that original forecasted budget gap and we create a preliminary budget change framework. That $7.9 million, the management team prepares a preliminary budget change list. They come in with a number of reductions proposed for the budget. We sit down with that roughly $8 million, and we devise a preliminary list of cuts that will fill that projected gap. At that point in time, the department chairs go back and develop individual budgets for each one of their departments. Let me describe the two budgets that they're going to develop, because they develop from scratch both a cost to continue budget based on real dollars, and they then also develop a balanced budget for their individual department. The cost to continue budget means doing the same level of service while including all the increases and decreases related to enrollment changes, efficiencies gained, inflation increases, rate changes, all those kind of things that have occurred. And this year, for the first time, we actually made some changes to the cost to continue budget because we built it like we do the balanced budget. We built it line by line from scratch. An example of a change would be workers' compensation, the premium change. We actually will spend $400,000 less for workers' comp. That's not a change in service. We have exactly the same benefit package. We have exactly the same policy. It's going to cost us $400,000 less. In years past, we would probably have shown that as a budget change, a budget cut, but it really isn't. So this year, those kind of changes are reflected as a cost to continue change. That's why you see a $6.9 million budget change page instead of the $8 million. Because there were changes made in the cost to continue. So the cost to continue budget that's in your book reflects line by line what we really believe it would have cost to do that same thing next year. The balanced budget, which is the one that we all look at, are the planned expenditures to best meet the board's goals and priorities. It's based on the revenue cap limits. It's based on increases in revenue, not under the revenue cap. For example, in the balanced budget, you will see a fee increase as a budget change. Changes to forecast expenditures. To be a budget change, it either needs to be a service reduction change. One example would be clerical reductions in the schools. One of the major changes that we're proposing in this budget is a reduction of clerical staff across all the schools. That is a change in service, and it reflects as a budget change. Another would be to change the funding source so that it's outside the revenue cap. The lead elementary principal would be an example of that. That position will now be funded out of federal IDEA or special education funds because of a change in the special education law. So that's also reflected as a budget change because we've changed the funding source and moved it out of the operating budget. So that's the kinds of things that reflect as changes to the operating budget, to the balanced budget. The final superintendent's balanced budget includes both of those two things. And they're both developed by individual directors of departments. They're developed from actual costs. They're developed line by line. There are 27,000 plus lines in the budget. They are developed. Each line is developed individually by the department head and is developed from zero. So they go back and look, rebuild every one of those lines from zero. This year, we were able to do that much more effectively because the new software that we have gives us access to information at a level that we never had it before. And it's possible, for example, to go back, look at a budget line, and tell specifically what we've spent in that budget line and what we spent it for, and anticipate, is that something that we're going to have to do next year, something we're not going to do, those kind of things. And so what you see as a result when you look at the budget change summary page is you see a change from the $8.3 million reduction that we forecast to a change of $6.9 million. The next graphic that's there, I'm not going to read through with you. It's there for your information. It really and truly talks about what happens once we have that budget. It is verified many times. Individual department narratives are written and division narratives are written to describe the impacts of the cuts and what happens within that department and that division. Accounting Services is verifying the numbers. They're reviewing the numbers, and it's checked about three different times as we go forward. Even despite that, we do every once in a while miss something. When I was talking with Carol about this, she opened the book directly to the one page that still had same service budget on it instead of cost to continue. The document in the end, and it is now, it was placed, at, I believe, by 3:30 Friday afternoon. It was on our website. It is available on our website. Tonight's PowerPoint will be available on our website tomorrow, as will any other information that the board asks for as we go forward.
Oh. Wrong website?
www.madison.org?
Yeah.
MMSD.
Wrong website. Do not use this website. You will not get any.
Or you may.
There may be something there.
I don't know what the...
Let me spend a little bit of time talking about the accounting system, because it's kind of important to understand some major components of the accounting system, because that's the way the budget is structured and the way the reports read. The first thing is that the total budget is comprised of several different funds. All the funds are specified and defined to the Department of Public Instruction. A fund is a separate set of accounting records segregated for the purpose of carrying on an activity. And that fund is used for accountability purposes to show that everything spent in that fund fit the requirements for that fund. There are requirements for each fund. So some of the big ones that you see, Fund 10 is our general operating budget. Fund 27 is special education. Fund 80 is community service. There are numerous other funds, and that those definitions are actually in your document. They're defined on page 84 of Chapter 1. We create a summary of expenditures by fund, and that's on page 48 and 49 of Chapter 1. And we create a summary of revenues by fund and object on pages 43 through 45 of Chapter 1. So those are places you can look to see our expenditures and revenues broken down by specific fund. The accounting system also uses functions. It tracks revenues and expenditures programmatically. Those are defined by DPI. The major functions are defined on pages 82 and 83 in Chapter 1. And a summary of expenditures and revenues by function is on pages 58 through 81 of Chapter 1. Functions, for example, functions would be things like general curriculum, then broken down by mathematics, English, reading, fine arts, those kind of things. Our accounting system also tracks things by organization, and that's the way the organization is defined by the individual school district. The budget is actually managed by this organization number, by department. The district has 9 departments, and the budget is broken down that way in the second chapter. Elementary schools, secondary schools, educational services, teaching and learning, business services, human resources, Madison School of Community Recreation, student services, and general administration. A summary of those departmental and division revenues and expenditures is on page 50 and 51 of Chapter 1. The last part of the accounting structure I'll talk about are objects. Those are defined by the Department of Public Instruction. Expenditures and revenues are charged to object codes that define the article or service that you're buying. For example, printing would be an object. That's a service that you're buying. The department and division expenditure budgets are stated by major object code in Chapter 2. That's what I handed out to you tonight, is the definition and the description of all the object codes. Very quickly, to talk about the budget itself, the total actual budget is $332,947,870. That's an $11,626,677 increase over last year. It's a 3.4% increase, which is less than inflation. Many funds make up that budget, and some of those funds are not under the revenue cap. The actual revenue cap is around $280 million. To further confuse matters, at places in the budget, you will see a total budget expressed as $376,809,209. That number includes the interfund transfer to special education. That interfund transfer is about $43,861,339. It makes it very confusing, but the way the accounting structure works, that has to be accounted for, and I'll try to explain that to you. If you look on the right, the big bar going up and down are our total expenditures in Fund 27. Fund 27 is special education. Everything that's spent in special education is charged to Fund 27. $69 million makes up that fund. $18.6 million of that comes in from state aid. $5 million comes in from federal aid. $1,482,000 comes in from other kinds of revenue. That may be tuition from other school districts or several things. That leaves $43,861,339 that is not covered by other kinds of funds. That has to be covered by the operating budget. On the far left, you see the total summary budget of $376 million. That $43,861,339 is transferred from that total $376 million to cover special ed. The money comes in to the operating budget. But when you're looking at only an expenditure budget, it shows up as an expenditure because as it's transferred. So this makes the total actual budget $332.9 million. So that's the interfund transfer. It's strictly an accounting mechanism, but it confuses the total amount of the budget. Where do the budget dollars go? 86% of our budget is in salary and fringe benefits. 10% is in fixed costs, utilities, maintenance, those kind of things that we really can't control. 4% of it makes up the rest of the budget. If you look at it in another way, instructional expense makes up about 78% of our budget. Instructional expenses include expenses in secondary schools, elementary schools, special education, teaching and learning, and student services. That makes up instructional costs and the way we can manage it. 12% is non-controllable expenses. Those are the things that I described in a little bit more. Custodial services make up about 5% of our budget. Now, this is custodial, not maintenance. This is actually cleaning the buildings, custodian salaries, and cleaning supplies, and those kind of things. 3% of the budget is business services operations. 1% of the budget is human resources operations, and 1% of the budget is general administration. Spent a couple minutes kind of talking about the budget document itself. You've had an opportunity to look at it. And so some of the things I say may be redundant to you, but let me walk through the actual final budget document will be an executive summary and three chapters. You have received the first two of those chapters. The first chapter is financial summaries of all the documents. The second chapter are the department and division budgets, which tell about the departments and divisions and then break that budget down into more detail than the financial summaries. The last chapter, which we will not print until later in the summer, are the school profiles that lay out each individual school, what their staffing looks like, the experience of their staff, test scores, attendance rates, all those kind of things. In the financial summaries, what I have up here really mirrors the tabs in your book. A couple of three things I might point out. The statement of financial position is actually the audit document that you received from the auditors earlier this year, along with the statement from Moody's and our balance sheet. The debt schedule, which you need a really large magnifying glass to read, actually lays out how much debt we have and how we're paying on that. The enrollment projections are in here. Our organizational structure is here. And then the financial overview, and I might spend a second on that. It talks about FTEs by funding source. It breaks out the revenues by fund that we mentioned earlier, the expenditures by fund, the expenditures by department, the revenues by function, and the expenditure by function. And then there's a definition and glossary, and hopefully the questions you have about the actual language in the document we've covered in the definition and glossary. If not, feel free to call Roger. Chapter 2, which is the department and division budgets, the very first thing in there is the budget change and reduction summary document. Then there is overall department information. It talks about a description of that department. It talks about how they do their work. It does a department financial summary, relates that department's work to the strategic plan, talks about how that department evaluates their effectiveness, has a department organizational chart, and a detailed department budget. Inside of each department, every department in the school district is made up of divisions. The division level is where the actual budgets are created and where the budget changes are made. Each division has a division description, the organizational chart for that division. Again, a financial summary that exactly matches the department's. Actually describes the major non-salary expenditures, and those are single expenditures that were more than $5,000. It's not a summation of a budget line, but single expenditures that are more than $5,000. It describes budget changes in that division. It tells what the budget change is. It tells the savings, and then it tells what the impact of that will be. It then talks about that division's highlights and challenges for next year, and then there's a detailed division budget broken down by object. One thing I might point out, and I'm sure y'all picked this up, on almost all the reports that are in here, FTEs are on the left of the report. Money, actual dollars, is on the right of the report, and we've tried to be consistent with that. On pages 6 and 7 of the executive summary, describes, and this is new for us this year, we've done this, we've just never documented it and given it to you. This document lays out each of the departments and district-wide, talks about the kinds of things that we tried to maintain, and talks about the changes in that department that were necessary to maintain those kind of things. And I'll just point out two or three as we go through. All of these, the people who they affect, are extremely important, and I'm not trying to diminish the importance of those. But some I might point out, district-wide, we first tried to protect classroom teachers, student support, safety and security for staff and students. At the secondary schools, at the elementary schools, those kind of things, the other thing that we protected besides classrooms was supplemental resources, so our schools still have the same supplemental resources. At the middle school, we really tried to protect the ability to implement the new middle school design. If you look in teaching and learning, we tried to maintain the literacy coaches at our high-need schools, and we did that by moving them in, by actually funding those out of Title I. Business services, probably one change here would be that meal prices will go up because of the breakfast program and the subsidies to that. In general administration, we tried to protect our race and equity work. That's also been moved to the IDEA, grant. Changes and reductions, this is on pages 6 and 7. Talks about the changes we actually made. We eliminated 5 administrator positions, the coordinator of reading recovery, which is actually was reduced from the cost to continue budget, the payroll manager, the architect and project manager that Roger mentioned earlier, the purchasing manager, and an assistant middle school principal that was really eliminated because of enrollment. Since 2000, 2001, we've reduced central office administrative staff funded by all funds from 76.5 to 63.75, or 17%. And we've reduced central office administrative staff funded by the operating budget from 59 to 41.2, or 25%. District-wide, to point out a couple of three things, we did include the Leopold addition and remodeling is in the budget. We moved positions to entitlement from operating budget, and I've mentioned those to you. And then pretty much across the schools everywhere, we reduced clerical SEA library pages and EA staff. In the elementary schools, a major thing to point out would be that we did propose, and we sent a memo to you earlier, about restructuring the elementary music program and begin phasing out 4-5 strings. Fifth grade would be next year. One other one is increasing Lincoln's elementary school 4-5 classroom ratio. This is Lincoln, not open classroom, to the same as other schools. All of our other schools in the school district are at 25-1 in 4 and 5. This takes Lincoln to that same level. Changes in the secondary schools, two that I might mention. We did reduce some non-classroom teachers. One thing that I might point out, because you're going to hear, particularly at the high schools, you're going to hear about allocation decreases. The vast majority of that is due to enrollment change. Each high school, according to the budget cut, lost one teacher. But you're going to hear schools that will talk about losing 6 and 7. That's because their enrollments are going down now in the high schools, which we anticipated. A couple of things I might point out. We increased the activity fee in the middle school. That's been there for some time. It allows the middle school kids to participate in any activities after school. We also implemented a student activity fee at the high school. We have not had that before. It applies to everything except athletics, which, as you know, already has a large fee. We made this decision, instead of applying a fee to each one of the individual activities, so if you're in drama, it's a fee, and if you're in choir, it's another fee, and something else, we just did a flat fee that all students pay that entitles them to participate in anything they want to, whether that's newspaper or whatever it is. It seemed to be a much more efficient way to do it instead of trying to track all that stuff. In education services, one change here is that we reduced our ability to deal with changes in enrollment once the school year starts. So we will staff the same way at the start of the school year, but as the year goes on, there will be creep in the size of those pupil-teacher ratios. Teaching and learning, I mentioned earlier, we moved our literacy coaches will now be funded by schools voluntarily out of their Title I, and as it ended up, they had about the same number funding them as we had before. Business services, one change. Forever, our custodial staff who work in the schools in the late afternoon and night have to support our permit system for our organizations in the community using the schools. We are proposing to move a small percentage of a custodian at each school to support those community activities and move that into Fund 80. We did that as opposed to reducing custodians. We will see some delays in work order completion. Now, this is not the kind of projects we saw tonight. This is our ongoing work because there are two trades positions that we've cut back. The summary of the budget changes by department are on pages 3 and 4 of Chapter 2. The detailed budget changes are located in the appropriate division budget pages in Chapter 2 and included. I've already been over this. That's the matrix that I gave you. Will help you track between funds, objects, those kind of things back to the original. And that is our balanced budget. There actually was applause. There was applause on here, and I took it off. I chickened that.
Questions? Are we going to do questions at this point?
Yes.
Okay. This is along the lines of additional information that I'd like to have. On page 11, where we have financial summary with FTEs, and I'm glad to see more FTEs. I would like to have on the budget side of that, for 04-05, the balanced budget, the revised budget, the actual budget, and then for 05-06, the balanced budget and the revised budget. That would help me see what goes on as more money comes in later in the year. And I would like that same information for Fund 80 for both those years. I think, I got to admit I haven't read this entire thing, but I think on page 174 we have some of the Fund 80 information, and there may be some more elsewhere. But if it appears in the same format as page 11, then it would be very helpful to have for Fund 80 balanced budget, revised budget, actual budget, and for 607, balanced budget and revised budget. The only question I have is where we have the lead principal or the race equity assistant superintendent job coming off grant money. I would like a complete list of administrative positions that would come off grant money, and I'd like to know what's the range of what that grant money can be used for. If we didn't use the grant money to pay for these, as an example, these two administrators, what could we use the money for?
Let me clarify. You're really talking about pages 10 and 11 of the executive summary? Is that? Or,
yeah.
Plus Fund 80. And you're looking at the...
I'm not looking...
You're looking at the money, not the FTEs that you want?
I'm looking at the budget side, yes, where
right.
It says 20405.
Right.
What's missing is the balanced budget and the revised budget that preceded that. And for 05-06, I'd like to see the balanced budget. We have the revised budget there. But I'd like to see the same information for the same years for Fund 80.
Okay.
One comment. That Fund 80 is broken out separately in every document. So, I mean, like it's in the fund document, it's a separate
okay.
breakout.
Could we have it all in one place? I mean, that's what I was finding, is I'm finding a little bit of an MSCR, and I'd like to see the whole Fund 80 budget in one place.
Okay. We can do that.
And then my other question was clear.
Just some questions on the pages 10 and 11. The FTEs, we do not have the data for the previous years.
I think Ruth is only asking for
I didn't
for
ask
that.
For that.
Okay. Oh, just for the money, because originally you'd said FTEs.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
I took that into account. I didn't ask
okay,
for that.
Okay. Thank you. I can do that.
Okay. And
the other question was what, well, actually, either administrative or non-classroom teacher positions would be coming out of grant money.
Yeah.
The examples, but they're not the only ones, are the lead principal and the assistant superintendent who deals with race and equity or whatever we call that position. I'd like a list of non-classroom staff on IDEA money or other grant money, and I'd like to know what other uses that same money could go to if we didn't use it to fund those positions.
Do you want only those changes for this year, or do you want other...
I want to see it in the proposed superintendent's budget.
No, I'm sorry, I'm not clear.
It's next year.
The changes that were made in this budget.
Yeah, what you're proposing
okay.
that we do for
that's,
06,
that's,
07.
Okay.
I might take the chance to explain a little bit about IDEA, because the reason why it's done the way it is because it is a change in the law. Up until this year or next year, federal special education grant money could only be spent on a child once the child was referred for special education. One of the big outcries across the country has been there are children who wouldn't be in special education if we did the right kind of interventions before they got referred. Always before, there was no funding for that. This year, not only is it allowed, it is required, and it is required up to 15% to be spent. And I think we can start with 5 or 8 or something, but ultimately 15% of the money from IDEA has to be spent on pre-referral interventions, they're called. And so it was a question of either creating new programs or taking programs or things or people that currently are dedicated to trying to do some of that pre-referral stuff and put them over there. So that specific one really relates to a real change in the law. The first one I think we all believe is a positive change, but that's...
I'm trying to ask for a list in one place of administrative or non-classroom teaching type jobs that are coming out of our grants, including 98. Okay, that was just an example.
Yeah, I understood what you mean.
Okay, Connor, and then Lucy.
I've been looking at the this long sheet we have and flipping through it and trying to find the lines in the budget, but I haven't been able to find what the specific increase in the middle school activity fee would be and what the high school activity fee would be.
The middle school increase would be $10 per student increase. The high school activity fee would be at $20 from 0 to 20. And then in addition, we would have a textbook fee increase of $10 for K-12. So there are three fee increases as part of the balanced budget.
And the middle school fee increases $10.
$10
what was
per
it? So it is up to what now?
It's at 12 now, I believe.
Right.
And it'll go to 22.
Okay.
So $10 increase in middle school fees go from 12 to 22. Textbook fees for everyone go from $25 to $35.
Correct.
And a high school activity fee is instituted at
$20. $20.
Okay. Thank you.
Lucy, you had a question.
Yeah. I'm wondering if it would be possible to get these numbers in a slightly different way, and I'll tell you why. I'm a very simple-minded person. So I was looking at the budget last night, and I was looking at these numbers for both FTEs and the budget, and I was looking at the 05-06 revised budget, and then I was looking at the increase-decrease. And the numbers in between weren't adding up. And I think I know how you got to those numbers. But what I'd actually like to see is the proposed balanced budget, the difference between the revised budget for 05-06 and the balanced budget proposal, because, in fact, it makes a huge difference in the number of both FTEs and expenditures. And I would just find it very helpful because, in fact, if we're going to be hearing from parents and upset staff and so forth, they're not going to be upset about the difference between cost to continue and the balanced budget. They're going to be upset about the positions that aren't in the schools anymore.
You want that same, the level of detail that you're looking at, is that the level of detail that you want in terms of
which
yeah.
number?
The categories?
If we could just get the increase-decrease to reflect the actual change from here to here.
From the revised
budget to the balanced
budget. To this year's revised budget to the proposed
10 and 11.
Balance.
10 and 11.
Yes. Actually, Lucy, I agree with you. I mean, I actually figured out the FTE changes myself.
We can print that.
Yeah.
No,
I knew there was an easier way. But yes, I
yeah.
agree with you. I think that would be helpful.
I mean, I could do this by myself, but no. to be honest, it would probably be faster for you to do.
Yes. Well, I only did it with the FTEs. I didn't do it with the money.
We can do it. It's no problem. What we tried to reflect here was the actual
changes,
budget changes, but to meet the gap. But we can do that. It's easy.
And we're talking only the page 10 and 11 report.
Right.
That's correct.
Right.
Okay. Summary by department.
Let's see. Connor, did you have your? No. Somebody else had their hand up earlier. Schwa?
Can I have more of a process question?
Sure.
I see in May we have 1, 2, 3, 4 meetings already scheduled to talk about the budget. And I assume that tonight I'm thinking it's more of a presentation and questions and information. And then on May 2nd, which is the next meeting where we're going to have both the budget hearing and also you had budget, maybe I assume that it's a budget discussion. When are we going to be able to sit down as a board and talk about proposals and amendments to the overall budget, or can we start to do that? Maybe not tonight, but begin to...
Well, right now we're scheduled for the second to last week, well, the week of May 22nd to begin talking about amendments.
You're scheduled for May 15th to have a real discussion about the budget. You will have had two public hearings.
Right.
And it's noticed where if there aren't a lot of people coming to the public hearing, you can talk there. I mean, it's set up that way. And then the first time you actually talk as a board about the budget, if a lot of people come to public hearings, is the 15th.
Okay. And I think I have a question sort of following up on this. I assume most of us have not worked our way through all of the departments of the budget yet. And my question is, do you want to, over the meetings that we have scheduled, do it department by department with some presentation or just someone there to answer questions as we look at each individual department budget? Or do you want to just sort of do it a little more randomly as you have questions?
I don't have an answer to that, but I have my own question. May 8th, public hearing on plan if referendum fails for addition at Leopold and New School in the West Memorial attendance area. Why would we be dealing, before we've dealt with the whole budget in any depth at all, why would we be dealing with that one issue as opposed to having a discussion of the budget as a whole?
Because part of the important piece there is that we've said we would stick with the recommendations from the Memorial West Task Force, and there hasn't been a chance for us to get public input from that, and I think that's important to have.
Would any of this be subject to change if we had, after we elect officers, or is this the schedule regardless of the elections that we'll have for officers on May 1st? Can this be changed, is my question.
Sure, certainly the new officers and committee chairs will have an impact on that.
What's your suggestion, Ms. Robarts?
It's perhaps a follow-up on Mr. Vang's question, if I understood it, but my concern is that we're going directly from tonight. We have a week to absorb a little more material ourselves. We start having hearings before we as a board have had a chance to discuss, ask questions, discuss this in any depth. And it would seem to me that if we can't do that on, I'm not sure why we have to do food policy on May 1st. I mean, it seemed to me between now and about May 24th, the end of May, to the extent we can do it, our main priority ought to be for us to thoroughly understand the budget and be able to communicate with the public about the budget and for people to have a chance to react. And we seem to have a lot of reaction, but not a lot of board discussion and analysis built into this schedule.
We can certainly schedule additional meetings as we need to for that. Laurie?
You mean we could not possibly do some of these things on a Monday night?
Yes, I think we can. Laurie?
One of the questions you asked was whether we wanted presentations or a chance to ask questions, and I personally would prefer to have the ability to ask questions and not to have the presentations and just ask the questions that I had. But I don't know how others feel.
Okay. Do you?
I second that. I would definitely not want to go through departmental presentations with the staff have already put significant time and energy into summing it up for us in a document, and I hope that we will be able to go fairly directly to questions about that material as opposed to what ends up being, I think last time we did it, it was weeks of explanation, by departments of what's basically in here, what they do, why they do it, how can this change, how can that change. If we had months to do this, that would make more sense, but it seems like we're rather short of time.
Okay. Should we approach the questioning, though, doing it department by department? And one of the reasons I'm asking that is that we can schedule it in such a way that we can make sure that the people who represent those departments who may need to be here to answer our questions are here at the appropriate times, as opposed to having them all here all the time. Does that make sense?
Would they really all need to be here all the time? I mean, I understand the logic of that, but it seems awfully constraining that, you know, for this hour we'll have Department A and then Department B and Department C. What I think we need to do is to be able to bounce off each other's questions and analyses and look perhaps for items that cut across departments, you know, but make sense to us. And I just hesitate. I would personally prefer not to have a very, notice an agenda in which we're talking about this and only this and then that department and only that department, when many of the issues are not departmental issues per se.
Lucy?
I think I'm in the middle here because I understand why we wouldn't want to have, you know, this department come up and we ask our five questions and then this department. But I'm wondering if we could group departments so that we had, you know, an elementary night or a middle and high school night, somehow find a way to do groupings so that the people who don't need to be here for all of that questioning could have some time off.
Sure. And I think we can. I mean, I think, for instance, that it would make sense to look at elementary and secondary ed, student services, and educational services on one evening, and then look at some of the other departments on another evening. I'm not talking about a huge, you know, specific, you know, Tuesday night is this night, this or anything, but just trying to conserve both our time and staff time so that we're focused. So we'll try and structure it a little bit that way. Johnny?
Just wondering, would anybody like the public hearing on a plan if a referendum fails the Leopold situation, is that something that we could hold off on until the fall? Because there's there's not going to be any changes next year. So, I mean, you in essence have a year from next year to the following year for your public input. I mean, right now it just seems like this falls kind of in a very awkward place. I mean, I understand, but you know why it's placed here. But it just, to me, it seems like the budget has kind of risen up to the.
Well, let me explain two things. First of all, I feel an obligation because we got the information and recommendation from the task force that we go to a hearing so that people at least have a chance to give us input. This is unlikely to be the final plan. And I think we need to have that input at a time that we can when all of this is still, if not fresh, at least present in their mind. I also think it's important that we have it before we go to referendum. And I think that was one of the messages that came to us very clearly from the task force. Now, I also think that Monday, the May 8th, we can structure it so that we deal with both the budget and the long-range plan. I don't think that that's going to be a real difficult thing.
Question?
Ruth?
Could you hold the public hearing on the Leopold edition on something other than a Monday night so that we had our regularly scheduled Mondays to spend on analysis of
sure.
the budget?
That would be possible. There wasn't anything scheduled on May 8th, and that's why we put it in there. But that would make sense. Okay. Lori.
I have two other questions about the budget.
Sure.
One of the things I didn't see in here, and maybe it's here somewhere, is if we're moving some of these positions to grant funds, what happens with the items that we were funding with the grant money before?
And I think that's basically what Ruth asked, and we'll be glad to provide you a detail about.
Well, Ruth was asking, I think, for the list of the administrators or the non-teachers that were funded through grants.
Yes, and I think.
But what I'm asking for is, what were we funding before that we're not funding, we wouldn't be funding now? And then those things are not shown as cuts in here? Because I didn't see anything.
No, they're not.
Because that would be something, I mean, if those were services, for example, that were occurring at the schools.
Yeah, my recollection is IDEA is the big one, and I think it was staff development and...
Those cuts are reflected. The cuts we made off of IDEA flow through are reflected.
We should give a report. We have that. We have that data.
We have it. We can get to.
But
yeah, it's the cuts that are here.
Yeah.
You know, I would assume that it would be reflected as cuts in the general operation budget.
If you look on page 3 of chapter 2, go to your second red tab, third red tab, I'm sorry. I didn't know.
Sometimes they have different pages. Not everybody has those tabs.
And look at page 3.
That doesn't include the things that are cut from IDEA.
Okay, we need to get that for you. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Page 61.
They start
on page 61.
Cost in. So it's in the departmental detail.
Yeah.
We identified the items that were on the local budget and the items that were on the flow through. But they're all listed there.
I'm sorry.
I'm lost. What do you mean flow through?
That's the
IDEA. That's the IDEA grant.
That's the name of the large special ed entitlement grant.
Okay, but I'm looking at, can you point me to something in this document?
Sure.
So,
for example, if you go to page 62, the first item, early childhood entitlement, replaces early childhood site rental. We were paying for rental of a site at Red Arrow, and that rental is now, that lease agreement is up, so we're eliminating the need for that. So that was a cut. If you go down.
And that was before grant funds were used to fund that?
Correct.
Okay, that would just help me though if we could identify what the grant funds were used for. Okay.
We'll get you a cleaner list.
You'll notice, I just want to point out that if it identifies, for example, professional development, a portion of IDEA entitlement funds, that cut of $34,452, which if you go down two items, again, I've tried to identify if they're on entitlement, listing that in the impact statement.
Yeah, it would just be helpful for those of us who have not been with you during all these discussions, to have the before and after in one place. You know, this is, whether it's IDEA or other outside grants, this is how we used it. You know, if it's now going to fund, I'm particularly interested if it's now going to fund an administrative or a non-classroom teacher or whatever, I'd like to know how we used it before and how we're proposing to use it in one place.
No problem.
I have one other question.
Lori.
This is a question for Pam. Just in the page 10 and 11 where we have the chart, summary chart of proposed expenditures, one thing that kind of jumped out for me, and I'm sure there's an easy explanation, but just is athletics administration, where we have the 2005-2006 revised budget at just a little less than $1.2 million, and then we have the balanced budget at $2.1 million, so $900,000 increase. What's the reason for that?
Do you want me? I can answer it. We, in an effort to move all of athletic costs to one org, we moved what was previously been charged to the high school. For example, coaches and supervision last year were charged to the high school accounts and not to the athletic administration, and we moved it all now so we have it in one place. The only thing that's not included are the four athletic directors who are still funded as a part of the high school allocations. Otherwise, that's all the expenditures related to athletics.
Okay, so the ADs are still in the high school budget?
ADs are still in the high school.
There are the athletic secretaries?
Athletic secretaries are still in the high school budget, except for the central office position.
Okay, the central office is in athletics.
We moved all the coaches and all the supervision and all the formula dollars are now consolidated in one area.
It was one of the things we were asked for last year, and it's a lot easier to do it if we get it all into one organization. So if you look over in secondary education, there's a division organization for athletics.
Well, and I guess this is more specific and we can talk about it at a later time,
right.
But why wouldn't we include then our ADs?
As we went through the process, it's a series of cleanups, and those were things that had been previously attached to an allocation from a high school. Or it had been a targeted allocation. Targeted allocation stayed with the buildings and did not get split out. That's definitely something we can do in the future. The clerical, it's up to the building principal to staff. They're giving a clerical allocation, and whether or not they use it for athletics or not is really a building level decision. We don't know that at this point in time when we're building the budget. So, in the future, as those become standard, if we have a set allocation for that specific area, we can move that to athletics. Otherwise, it becomes part of the high school.
Ruth, on page 7, back to the executive summary, community service, reductions, changes. The last one is an increase in program fees. Will I find back here in the MSCR section a list of all the fee changes? Because I haven't so far.
I don't believe so. I didn't do that.
I'd like to see those, and I'd like to know if those are, what are they? Are they adult fees, student fees? What are they?
We can get that back to you. I'm not sure if that was included or not.
And there's also an increase in middle school activity.
That's
the one we've already
included.
So the activities the middle school kids will be families will be paying more for are community service activities or school-related activities? On page 7, it looks like they're...
MSCR administers the after-school activities at the middle school. And that's why it's reflected in both places. It's actually the general fee that we collect. It opens up all those to all students. A part of that goes directly to, stays with the building, and then a part comes downtown as a general revenue, and that's the part that we're increasing.
So that
I'd like a separate explanation of the activity fees for middle school.
Okay.
And what goes to the schools and how it gets there. And what, besides just the increase.
There's also something on that, on page 181, that says that MSCR receives $8 from the middle school fees and schools will receive $17 per child.
Right.
So is the high school activity fee and the middle school activity fee would be charged to all students?
Yes.
Okay, not just students participate in?
All students.
Okay.
The current $12 middle school fee is already charged to all students.
That's correct.
I had a question, actually, going into the elementary and secondary. The big portion of non-salary items, how much of those are formula monies? Do we, for instance, on page 6 of the main budget under chapter 2, under elementary, there's almost $7 million of non-salary, or 1.7.
Elementary formula is $985,220, that's basic formula. There is also included amount for the common school fund or library funds, which would be another $155,000. And then you would have TAG allotment of $31,000, SIP allotment of $115,000, which is a combination of both salary and non-salary accounts. And you'd have $68,918 in staff development costs, which again can go back and forth between salaries and non-salaries.
Okay.
$4,206,000, but that includes Title I.
Okay. So essentially about somewhat more than half in the elementary is formula money.
That's correct. And
I guess I would like the same kind of breakdown. I mean, if you could give us
I'll just give you the sheet of, copy of the formula breakdowns and their distribution by buildings. It's
okay.
One-page document.
Okay. Ruth?
Question on six of the executive summary. Under high schools, we have things maintained, including comprehensive high school course offerings. Does that mean that back here under elementary or high schools, I'll be able to find a definition of comprehensive high school or some kind of match of what that means in terms of courses?
No, I don't think you'll find definitions of what we maintained.
Well, is there a definition of comprehensive high school programs elsewhere? I'm just trying to figure it out. Where?
Pam, can get that for you.
You don't have to do it right now. I'm just tell me when.
Tell you where.
Yeah.
So we don't have it written down in the book itself, but when we were talking through the process and we talked with high school principals about the number one thing they wanted to maintain, it was the comprehensive nature of the high school. And as that conversation unfolded, what they were talking about specifically was making certain that there were not only core academics involved at the high school, but also vocational education, art, music. So there's...
General.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mary?
This is probably all related to cleaning up the athletic budget, but just when I look back on that on page 42 under chapter 2, we've got purchase services going from 30,000 to 533,000. Is that non-teacher coaches or something? Because we have teachers up there going up $1 million, so I presume that's what you're talking about in salaries. And then supplies and materials we have going from?
Purchase services would be the officials.
Supervisors.
And those weren't included in there before?
No, not before.
Okay.
They were at each individual school.
All right. If you could just provide something that shows how you clean that up.
Sure.
That would be helpful.
Another terminology question, probably for Pam Nash. Under high schools in reductions, it says reduce discretionary teacher staff. I don't recall exactly the term discretionary. Are we talking about unallocated, or what's that mean?
I'm sorry, I was talking behind your back.
I knew you were, but I was
High school discretionary teachers. What does that mean?
What's that mean? Is that unallocated staff?
Yes.
Okay.
No,
thank you.
It's not unallocated.
Well, no? What is it? It's a new term for me.
At the middle school, it's one thing. Here, I believe that it meant we were reducing one teacher at each high school at their discretion.
That's right. Oh, so it's not discretionary staff.
No. At the middle school, when it's talking about discretionary teachers, it is a specific thing. That was probably a bad use of terms. We should have probably used something else at the high school level.
So, okay, right now, at both the high school and the middle school, we essentially staff them at we have a staffing ratio. And then the schools determine how that sorts out between English and Phi-Ed, et cetera.
So we reduced one, at the high schools, we reduced one teacher at each high school.
Mm-hmm.
At whatever however they wanted to take that out. At the middle school, when you see discretionary teachers, though, based on their enrollment, each middle school gets a certain number of discretionary teacher allocations that they use to fund guidance counselors, librarians, learning coordinators, those kind of things. So the two things have different meaning, and we should have used another term in the high school.
Okay. Lori?
On the funding the custodial services from Fund 80, did you have an analysis on how you came up with the number that you're proposing be funded that way?
Not really. We didn't have a formula. What we're looking at is saying our target was six in meeting the budget, the budget bottom line, and then looked at alternatives. Is there another way to fund those rather than cutting them? When we started taking a look at it, the impact of cutting an additional six custodians would cause us to close some schools after school and not make them available for community use. It's easy for us, and I can go back and do analysis, it's easy for, across all 46 buildings to say the amount of activity, the amount of hours we spend every night dealing with, the interruptions in the programs and the rentals will easily come to 6 FTE. So we actually came at it for the fact that we're going to cut 6 FTE. The impact would be we'd close buildings, so therefore we can justify the 6 coming out of community service. That's how we got there.
If you're going to close the building, you wouldn't be able to close it right at school time, right? I mean, because you'd have to have people taking out the trash or sweeping the floors.
We wouldn't clean those buildings.
We wouldn't clean those buildings at night.
Ever?
No.
So how would
every other day.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're saying you'd close a building every other day then?
That was when we were looking at having to cut six custodians, that's what we were looking at.
I think it is important to do the analysis
sure.
The other way.
We can do the minutes analysis and the amount of time spent. We've done it on individual buildings as we've looked at programs. We did it at Tokyo a number of years ago.
We
can update that.
And I think that's important to have to justify.
Back to community service and the proposed increase in middle school activity fees. Was there a legal analysis that tells us it would be okay, if I understand this, to charge an additional fee to kids at the middle school level to support what's basically after-school MSCR activities? Aren't those supposed to be separate? Is there a legal analysis, I guess is my question. It would seem to me that, we know that Fund 80 can only be used for non-school for community service type programs, and I've tended to see that as, you know, a combination primarily of tax dollars, but, you know, a separate thing. This sounds to me like kind of the reverse situation where we raise revenues by charging kids who all have to be there for the daytime in order to pay for some activities that are after school that they may never participate in. Do we have a legal analysis?
The fee increase, the analysis we did was that it would be strictly a general fund revenue. It's not going to offset any additional cost for MSCR. I believe why MSCR included as a footnote in theirs was having that fee increase could impact their participation. It's not additional revenue for them. It doesn't enhance their program, but it is as a general fund revenue, it could impact their operations. But I'll do a full analysis of that and breakdown of that.
Connor and then Schwab.
So is any of the money from the high school activity fee or the middle school activity fee, is the increase going to the activities or is it going to the district?
To the district to continue to fund all the activities that were in place.
Our approach, Connor, has always been to not try to place individual activities having to depend on their income. If they did, we wouldn't have it because the general fund subsidizes everything we do. So all the money comes into the general fund, and we try to budget to support that activity without trying to tie the two things together. Because if we did, we don't have anything that supports itself.
Has there been thought about a high school activity fee, like a general fee for any high school, like an optional fee, that if you want to participate in high school activities?
We actually talked about that at length. It's costing almost as much to maintain that and track it and do everything else, because then I've got somebody paying a fee over here for drama and then paying another fee for choir, and then it just seemed to be easier to do a flat fee, which makes it available to any child in the school who wants to participate in whatever they want to participate in.
And are there fee waivers available for that if people can't?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The board policy actually applies the fee waiver to any fee that we charge in the school district.
And the fee waiver would come from the district, not from the schools, right?
That's right. It doesn't affect your budget at all. It doesn't affect the expenditure budget of the activity at all. That expenditure budget is not affected by this income.
Yeah, but I'm saying like the school wouldn't be the one that pays, because I know schools pay some waivers.
The fees are calculated with that built in.
Okay.
So the income is calculated, I believe, at 40% that we would waive.
All right.
And after school activities, sports is out of, it's not in there. Are there activities that, you know, have conditions for students who want to be involved, such as grades, attendance, and if somebody pays that fees, what's to stop them from saying, I want to join this club or that club, but if they have conditions where the students have to meet, how are we going to go about that?
Right now, I believe I'm correct that we do not have any conditions attached to any activities other than athletics. So there is no attendance requirement. There is no grade requirement. There are no requirements for participating in, I don't believe. Is there one?
Attendance at the middle school. If you haven't attended that day.
Okay. So attendance, if you haven't attended that day, you can't play in their after school. You can't be in their after school programs.
That's the only one.
Other than that, there's no grade requirement or anything.
Is that the only one mandated by the district, or is that the only one, period? Because I know at the high school some activities, such as drama, to audition you have to show up with a completed green card.
That would be up to the individual. There's no district policy about that.
And individual coaches and advisors would still have that discretion?
Except in athletics, where everything in athletics is consistent across the school district as we can make it. And one of the differences is, In the case of athletics, there are state regulations about what you have to do to play, too. So we can't go below those. But we've tried to be real consistent in athletics with our athletic code.
Shrad, did you have any more questions?
No. It's just a question. My guess is that we're going to probably run into some questions and problems in that. If I, as a student, is I have to pay a fee, but I assume that when I pay a fee to do something, that there's no condition attached. And if I want to get involved in an after-school club, it would seem to me that those are activities that would encourage students to attend, and it would not be a punishment if you don't attend school. You cannot, join this club. It would seem to me that there are some clubs that would try to reach out, particularly to those students, and it might end up just punishing you.
This is just on a specific day. This is if you don't. If you're not in school today, you can't miss school today, and then at 3:30 come to the chess club. You have to go to school that day to go to chess club that night. They're not saying, they don't say if you miss 10 days you can't be in the chess club. It's just that one day, you can't skip school all day or be sick all day, and then at 3:30 you get well and you come doing the clubs when you weren't in school. So that's.
At the same time, we don't give that option to students who say, if I don't want to pay it, I'm sure that maybe, they'll probably get a letter from the district that says you haven't paid your fees.
Probably.
So you're obligated to pay.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, you don't have a choice. You have to pay that, but if I choose to do something, it says... Even though tough luck, if you pay, you can't join this club because you didn't attend school today. And so,
I think that's pretty standard for everything. I think it's probably true in athletics. It's pretty standard in most things that if you don't attend school during the day, you can't participate in the activities after school, whatever those are.
Yeah, I think we're dealing with two different things here. With athletics, even though you may have paid some fee. You pay a fee, extra fee to play, sports. And if you do that, there is an understanding that if you want to do that, you have to meet certain conditions. But here, since we're opening it up for everybody, it says as long as you pay, is it $11 extra or $12 extra now, you can join any sports or not any sports, but any after-school activities. And I think that we have to be clear with students that, you are obligated to pay, but at the same time, if you're going to join this, there are conditions.
In the middle school, they've always paid. This is not new at the middle school. They've always paid. They've always been able to participate in anything they wanted to at the middle school for many years. All this does is raise the amount of money. So the rules are no different than they've ever been.
Lori?
Since we're talking about the activity fees, on page... 66 of the first chapter, where we have the expenditures by functions, we have the athletics, but then we also have the co-curricular activities, the academic and the music. I think we have the academic there at $182,000 and the music co-curricular at $44,000. My question is, where does the activities fee show up on the revenue side of this, and how does that compare to the cost of the activities being funded?
All the fee increases were included as one lump sum in under general operations. They were not broken out by function. So they would show up, if I go back to the detailed sheets that are a few pages back on revenue, and then the crosswalk should walk this through also. I mean, if I'm going back to page 43 in that same chapter, you see total fee on line 16. Student fees increasing to $233,800. That includes all three of the fee increases.
Okay, where? 43.
I'm laying 16.
Student fees.
So by implementing the fee at the high school and increasing the fee at the middle school, well, and there's the additional textbook fee.
And the additional textbook. The textbook fee was $150,000. Look at the individual ones. The middle school fee increase was $38,800, and the increase in, or the new fee at the high school for activity fee was $45,000.
$45,000? Yep. Who's listed as the budget cuts on the page?
Okay. So just when you compare it, if these expenses are accurate on the co-curriculars, I guess as a comparison. It's not that we're collecting more money than we're paying for co-curriculars. Page 66.
But I think the student fees also include the athletic fees and all student fees, course fees, and everything like that.
Mm-hmm. This is a good example of the chart, the matrix, you know, the in middle school activity fee on that revenue by fund, I said was page 43, line 16. If you go to the revenue by function, it's cross-referenced to page 54, line 71. As you can see, it's in a district-wide revenue account, not distributed by function. But that shows you, you know, how it crosswalks.
I always think there's something that's too much information.
The revenue side minuses are good.
Yeah.
Just in case anybody gets
it. Okay. Other questions? Sure, Arlene.
Just a general comment on the preparation of this book. I thought you've done a great job putting this together. I think the executive summary was very helpful. I think the chart was very helpful to, you know, go through each of the departments and see the comparisons, and the cross reference was good. I think a lot of things that people have been saying about the budget probably over the course of the past year have been incorporated into here, and I just wanted to say thank you for doing that, because it was much easier to get through than in the past.
Thank you. If I could, Carol, I'd like to recognize certainly Roger and his accounting staff and his budgeting staff and all the department chairs who worked a lot of hours going back and forth over this thing and putting it together. In public information, Faye Hackbart did all of this layout. And I told her we had to put a separate overtime line in for her. And Mary G reviewed everything in here. And so they really, I wanted to compliment all of them for the tremendous amount of work and effort they put into this. Yeah. And the one thing we've learned is no matter how many times you go over it, there's still someplace.
That reminds me. If I could pass out, you know, an insert, please. this is. Please insert this page after page 240 in the blue book. And just a note. Oops, I'll hold on to one.
The blue book is chapter two.
Chapter two. And just a notation. Pages 114, 115, and 116 are out of order, and page 117 is doubled. So it's. To emphasize, as many times as we looked at it, we still missed a couple things. Right.
Even though it says page 75?
Yes.
I also want to say I found this, many parts of this, much easier than in prior years, and I really, really appreciate those charts and setting it up in the ways that I asked to on the functions, and I just really appreciate it, so thank you.
And I want to say thank you for putting in line number.
Yes. The title, line number.
That makes it a lot easier.
We are
Roger,
responsive.
Can you give us again the other, you said page 17?
page 114, 115, and 116 in Chapter 2 are out of order. And you can tell by the line numbers that they're just out of order.
Okay.
And then 117 is doubled up. It's in there twice.
It was it that good a page? I haven't gotten to that.
I'll email those to you as well.
Okay. Yes, I am impressed. I think it is a very important document. I just wish we didn't have to make the cuts. I'd be much happier with it. One thing that I wanted to go back to, Art, when you talked about the fact that the new software allowed us to really go in and track how our budgeted amount actually was expended, and to when we weren't expending it, to pull out some of that extra. That's essentially a one-time thing. I mean, once we've done that, next year we wouldn't be able to. Or
not really, because if you think about the fact that that a budget is planned expenditures. It's not real expenditures. It's planned expenditures. So as things change during the course of you actually implementing that budget, there are things that you anticipate. For example, maybe you anticipate that I'm going to need to buy this piece of equipment. And, in fact, it ends up I find another way to do it or I don't buy that piece of equipment. If you just roll everything up, that same piece of equipment stays in the budget and rolls up again. Well, we now have the capability, and I can just tell you what I did as I was working on the general administration budget. For example, I would look at actual expenditures, and I would say, okay, this was a budget of $20,000. What did we spend that for? And we have the capability of the new software to actually go down to the individual transactions in that and tell, okay, $50 was spent for this and $40 was spent for that. And so not only can you tell if there's something that was budgeted in there, that isn't spent, but I can also tell, are those things we should be spending? Or is there a more efficient way to do this? So that kind of level of detail where you can get all the way down into individual transactions and see that was a big help. We found the same thing. The FTEs look kind of simple when you're sitting there looking at them on the sheet, but there's 4,000 of them, and they're all individual jobs. And so on the HR side, it gives us the capability to really track individual people into those jobs and to maintain that, where we really haven't had that capability before. We literally reviewed every single individual FTE. So that's a good capability.
Lori?
Sorry. Food service.
Yep.
Last year we budgeted, I think, that we were going to pay $50,000 or something. And did I see in there that
right.
There was a loss of 200 and some thousand? And where does that come from out of our...
It comes out of the operating budget. If there's a loss in the food service fund, it is an forced operating fund transfer.
Okay, but we didn't have any money budgeted for that, so where...
It comes out of equity or out of... It's a balancer at the end of the year. So we have to work very hard and are working very hard to bring that fund into balance.
One of the things we've been told, or at least I was told last year, is, oh, don't worry about this. This covers itself. So when they increase staff or whatever, we don't need to worry about it.
We're worrying about it.
And I think when we look at the number of FTEs, I think that was one place there was an increase in FTEs.
Right. Well, food service has been kind of the last budget we do in the past because up until 2 years ago, it always made money. So you figured out what your expenditures were, you took it up for whatever inflation was, and you figured your revenues were going to go up that amount, and you'd be fine. Well, as we've tightened everything else down, food services got, and they've been hit by inflationary numbers too. We can't do that anymore. We didn't have the systems in place to take them to where we are now. And this is the first year, this budget, it's the first year that we did individual by individual staffing for food service and FTEs. Any year before that, the FTE numbers were what we kind of thought we had at the time. So the systems have allowed us to take that to the next step.
So I know I saw in here that there's proposals to increase the cost to the students, But we're also going to be watching it on the expense side?
Absolutely. I met with Frank, the director, this week and this last week. It all runs together right now. With the idea that, you know, if you take forward his expenditures from 2 years ago was $7.9 million. And if you take that 4.5% to 5% up for each of the 2 years, that's a budget of $8.8 million, which is what we have in there. His revenues have not kept up. He's got to either increase revenues and or decrease costs in order to balance that budget for next year. And that's what we're working with, and he's working very hard with the staff to do that.
I'm sorry, what did you say? There was a shortfall last year?
Last year was about 200-some thousand, I think it was about 240,000 shortfall last year. Previous year there was about a $300,000 shortfall.
Okay, any further questions or, well, let me just say, if as you go through the budget you have other questions, you can email them to Art and Roger so that or Mary or all of them so that they can begin to prepare answers. Now, Ruth?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Connor, your vote?
Aye.
The rest of the board, those in favor? Aye. Opposed? It passes unanimously.